Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Starting and operating a small business against all odds, living largely by your wits, you demonstrate more courage and devotion to a dream than any other non-military American in this century.
All right, we're back. It's 13 after. Thank you very much for joining us. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and our phone number is 888-822-8255. Our special guest is our good friend Jonathan Zuck. He's the president of the Association for Competitive Technologies. Jonathan is a widely known and respected leader in the technology industry. He was a professional software developer for more than 15 years prior to joining ACT fairly recently. Jonathan, welcome back to the show.
Hey, it's great to be here.
It's good to have you back. Are you glad to be back on the right coast?
I sure am.
You made a tour of the Silicon Valley, I know, recently.
Yeah, I made a tour of the Silicon Valley with some congressmen a couple of weeks ago, and then I was in Seattle on business, and then a little bit of vacation in Vancouver, so I've been gone a while.
Yeah. I know the last time you were here, you talked to us a little bit about some of the things that happened with you out there, some of the things you were doing with the congressman and everything, but what can you tell us anything that you feel was accomplished in the trip, especially with regard to the legislators that you took with you?
Well, I think what was remarkable about it was that over 20 legislators took 3 days out of their recess to come together for fairly substantive discussions of technology and technology policy.
Mm-hmm.
It was 12-hour days of touring the companies, finding out what they did, how they worked, and what policies would affect them.
These were all Democrats, too, weren't they?
Yeah, it's part of a group called the New Democrats who are trying to kind of bridge the gap between the business community in some measure and the Democratic Party.
The Democratic Party sorely needs that.
Yeah, and it's an attempt to give you a whole candidate. There's a lot of people in the technology industry and in business in general that we consider themselves socially liberal, but are looking for a little bit more fiscal conservatism.
Well, they've actually found out which side of the bread their butter's on. I mean, the marketplace is what creates wealth. You know,
right.
Government doesn't create wealth. Our social programs don't create wealth. The marketplace does.
Right.
And these guys have figured that out. And I'm so happy to see that. I mean, we need more people in the Democratic Party recognizing that the goose is laying the golden egg is the marketplace.
Right, and these new Democrats, I think, definitely are moving in that direction.
Yeah,
and they've been demonstrating that on the Hill, with the way that they've voted to try and loosen export controls so that our companies can compete better abroad.
Right.
That they've helped put caps on Y2K, frivolous lawsuits.
Absolutely.
Things like that. So, I mean, there's areas in which they've bucked traditional Democratic best interests and really gone out in support of of the market.
Well, one of the things that my audience has heard me say before in praise of the administration and the Democratic Party for their part, and that is the way that they have had pretty much a hands-off policy on the high-tech industry, haven't they?
Right.
For the most part. There are a few,
really
few lapses in there. But
so, like the Microsoft antitrust case.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
But
other than that,
they have. I mean, I think that's the president came out of the New Democrat movement, and so I think they count themselves over 60 at this point that really believe that the market should drive the economy.
Yep. Okay. There was something else you want to talk about. You mentioned Microsoft a minute ago, and my audience knows that we've been covering about once a month, every 6 weeks or so, we've done a spot on Microsoft, the US v. Microsoft case. In fact, you were with us last week with David Lofsky talking about this.
Right.
But
and his dog.
Yeah. Yes. Right. And the dog Flash, the Basset Hound Flash, of course. But there's another Microsoft case that was in the news recently.
Right. There's three total cases. There was a Bristol case and a Sun case and then the DOJ case. And the Bristol case in Connecticut was just resolved. This is a case where Bristol had created some, I guess you would call it Windows NT emulation software for Unix.
Mm-hmm.
So it's software that would allow programs written for Windows NT to run on Unix.
Mm-hmm.
And they were able to create it to some extent by licensing software from software source code from Microsoft.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was a point at which some competitors joined that market, and Microsoft raised its price for its source code, and the competitor had already agreed and signed a contract and bought the source code, but Bristol refused.
Bristol was the was the original company.
Right, Bristol is exactly.
What's the full name of the company?
Bristol Technologies.
Bristol, okay.
And they said that they wanted, you know, to be guaranteed a price for into perpetuity and things, and they thought this was a violation of antitrust. It was somehow withholding of this technology from them. And it was another great example of a case full of like email snippets. All about how aggressive a competitor Microsoft is and things, and the jury basically threw the case out of court. They were asked whether or not Microsoft was really considered to have a monopoly. The jury said no. They were asked whether or not Microsoft had violated any kind of antitrust law, and the jury said no. The one decision that went in Bristol's favor was some state law about unfair business practices. Where, you know, they said that Microsoft should have been clearer about how long the contract was in force.
Right.
And they awarded Bristol $1. So it was a somewhat symbolic victory, if nothing else, I guess, for Bristol. But I think what it really underscores is that when you really put this kind of issue in front of a bunch of common sense people, they see through all the lawyering and email snippets and things and realize that there's just nothing to these claims.
Now, this was a jury trial, wasn't it?
Yes, exactly.
And see, that's different from the U.S. v. Microsoft case in Washington because that's being decided by Judge Jackson.
Exactly.
Judge Thomas Penfield Jackson. I think I said his name correctly. And all by himself.
Right,
so,
exactly.
I've got a question for you about how those two cases connect to each other. Jonathan, when we come back after these messages. Folks, it's 20 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Jonathan Zuck is our special guest. He's the president of ACT, and we'll be back in just a few minutes. Our phone number is 888-822-8255. All right, we're back. 24 after. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I was just talking to our friend Jonathan Zuck, the president of the Association for Competitive Technologies, ACT, about his trip out west, and he was telling me about going on this boat ride out to see the killer whales. And a male came within 10 feet of you?
Yeah, a male orca came within about 10 feet.
Now, where was this?
It's a dorsal fin that's 6 feet high.
Boy, I bet that took your breath away, didn't it?
It really does. I mean, it's just amazing. That's just the fin on the back of the thing. And it was 6 feet high. So.
Yeah. Well, where were you when you saw these?
In Victoria, Canada.
Victoria, Canada. How did you get there?
About 40 miles from Victoria Harbor by boat.
Yeah.
We drove out there on these Zodiacs, which are basically these fiberglass boats with these big sort of inner tubes around them.
Yeah.
Traveling about 25, 30 miles an hour over choppy water. So
for an hour and a half each way to get to see.
A trip to the chiropractor now. But
but it was worth it, though, right?
It was worth it. It was really an incredible sight to see them in their natural habitat. And
all right. That's
playing
great.
Together and stuff. It was a great trip.
That's great. 888-822-8255. Folks, if you'd like to ask me or Jonathan a question, if you have a comment you'd like to make, 1-888-822-8255. Jonathan is the president, as I mentioned, of Association for Competitive Technologies. He is our high-tech guru, and when he joins us, we talk about policy that affects the high-tech world, as well as some of the stuff, some of the gadgets and neat capability that's out there, and that we're going to get into some of the gadgets in just a few minutes. But I want to talk a little bit more about some of the case law that's going on right now. We just mentioned, you were just telling us about the Bristol case, which Microsoft essentially won, and that was a trial by jury. The U.S. v. Microsoft case, the Justice Department's antitrust division case against Microsoft, is being judged by a judge instead of a jury. Can any of the case law, any of the precedents, any of the decisions that were that came from the Bristol case, can any of those be injected or introduced into the US v. Microsoft case?
Well, the interesting thing is that the evidence phase of the Microsoft of the DOJ case is done.
Right.
So there's no opportunity to introduce evidence per se anymore. But certainly in closing arguments, it's possible for Microsoft's attorneys to use the Bristol case as a kind of a reality check,
mm-hmm.
where, okay, come on, you know, come on, people, you know, this is, when this is really put to the common sense test and we get past all the legal, you know, hullabaloo here, we realize mm-hmm. there really isn't much to this. And that is how this will be used. And I think also this decision will help be a deterrent to a bunch of also-rans that might have thought they saw blood in the water,
yeah,
and would climb on board to have their own cases. I mean, my guess is that there's a bunch of lawyers all over the country going back to the drawing board.
Oh yeah, that sets some folks back a ways, I'm sure. But you know, even without introducing it, and I understand that Judge Jackson is an excellent jurist and a very very conscientious and a very intelligent man. But even without introducing it, I mean, he reads the papers. He's very much aware of that case, and I'm sure he has a high degree of regard for a jury, for what thoughtful people spending the time to hear this case decided. I'm sure that even without introducing it to him in the way of evidence, that's probably going to be I would have to think it'd be something he'd consider, you know, subliminally, if nothing else.
I think so too. Yeah, I mean, I think definitely that it's going to give everyone pause of, oh, you know, maybe those emails aren't that significant. Maybe everybody who matters, because the consumers really are the only ones who matter.
Right.
Everybody who matters just realizes that this is just business, and that the last thing we need is intervention into one of the most successful industries, our economy. The recent Commerce Department workforce report said that the IT industry was responsible for over 30% of the growth of the economy last year. And that by 2006, over half of the people in the country will be employed by high technology.
That doesn't surprise me at all.
The automobile industry.
Yeah, that's incredible. You know, I saw a UN report the other day that said that there are currently 170 million people online, and within 18 to 24 months, in the year 2001, they're predicting that will go to 700 million in the next 18 to 24 months.
Right.
Now think about that. The capability, the productivity, the jobs that will result from all that, I mean, there are jobs inside of those numbers, aren't there?
There sure are.
Yeah. Stand by, Jonathan. Folks, when we come back, we're going to talk about some of the gadgets, some of the high-tech stuff that's out there. Jonathan is an expert in this area, and he's going to tell us about some of the stuff that's coming down the pike at you, to help you be aware of it and make good purchasing decisions. It's 29 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the small business advocate. Jonathan Zuck is our special guest. We'll be right back. We are back. It's 33 after. Thank you very much for joining us. I'm Jim Blassingame, the small business advocate. Jonathan Zuck is our special guest. He's the president of the Association for Competitive Technologies. Jonathan, before we get into some of the high-tech stuff that we've got to talk about today, would you tell us a little bit about ACT and how we can contact
Sure. The Association for Competitive Technology is a D.C.-based trade association for the high-tech industry, but we also produce a lot of white papers and newsletters and things that people can get for free just by signing on as individual members, which mm-hmm. is free. And we can be reached at www.actonline.org, adtonline.org.
Okay. Now, you represent about 500 different organizations, don't you?
That's right.
Yeah, and growing every day, right?
We sure are. Did fastest growing trade association in Washington.
You probably picked up a few while you were going to the left coast out there.
Oh, yeah. We're trying to really redefine the high-tech industry trade association business, if you will, because this is a kind of a unique situation in which you're trying to get Washington involved in an industry that is moving so quickly that the delivery of very specific, very focused information really quickly, both to policymakers and to people in the industry, becomes really, really important, because decisions can quickly be wrong or irrelevant if they're not well informed in a very specific and timely fashion.
Right. Well, I'm glad you guys are up there because, you know, this industry is an industry that really needs to be allowed to fledge without a lot of encumbrances by government, and it still is a fledgling, isn't it?
I mean, yeah, it's still a nascent industry. It's very new, and yet it's just about to overtake the automobile industry.
Yeah, in size. But in terms of its development, it's still an immature industry, and there's so much good that can come from leaving it alone. And you know, obviously, as you said earlier, consumers have to be protected, but there's so much good that can come from letting entrepreneurs' minds go. And you know, obviously, can't break the laws, but
right.
But there's so much that we can gain from that, and that we are gaining from it.
And it's a whole new pricing models and everything now. I mean, so many things are becoming free. I mean, it's amazing. There was a time when you needed a calculator for school, you were going to spend $60, and now consumers are basically getting them for free if they're willing to have, you know, a little logo on them or something. And
of course, there are those of us who remember when there weren't calculators to take to school. I mean, I think I know people like that. I think I know someone like that.
Oh, I remember that too. But I mean, I think after a while, even the protractors started having logos on them and things like that.
Exactly.
But now we're seeing that in PCs. We're seeing low cost and free PCs because people are experimenting with advertising mechanisms and community building mechanisms, et cetera.
Now, if we let
people go, we'll have an amazing market surge.
That's an interesting development there. There's two things there that may impact the computer industry. Now, when you and I talk about high tech, we're talking about the whole range of the industry, but there is a component of the high tech industry that are the computer manufacturers, and they're being impacted by two things. One is the free PCs that are being, as you say, some of them are actually being given away. And they become, and there's one out now called an iToaster. I think you're familiar with that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think right now it's $200, but ultimately, who knows, it may be free one day. But there are some, I think there are some that are free out there. And these are, as you said, basically, they give you capability. They allow you access to the Internet. Your capability is not the same as if you had an iMac computer or a PC or something like that. But it has some capability and some software capability. But basically, as you said, it's a platform for delivering advertising, and that's how they pay for it, which is not unlike what your television is.
Right,
right?
Your newspaper.
Exactly, yeah. And so, I mean, if you had to pay for all the shows that came on, you know, you couldn't, I mean, you get all these shows on television for free because of the advertising. So
right.
That's one thing, Jonathan. The other thing is something that's very interesting to me, and there was an article in the Wall Street Journal this week, and I heard Bill Gates talk about this 2 or 3 years ago, and that was the fact that he believed that one day the power of on your screen, the power at your fingertips, would come from the Internet, not from your hard drive, not from your software that resides on your hard drive, not from the power of your processor, but from the Internet.
Well, and to some extent that's true. There's a more and more movement toward building centralized applications because this issue about software conflicts, this issue with having to install upgrades and things like that is a real pain in the neck for people and centralizing them helps with that. I think we still have some advances to make in computers, and I think there are still some applications that are on the horizon that are still going to require PCs and probably more powerful PCs that have to do with things like voice recognition and voice synthesis. And, you know, I mean, we're still trying to work our way back to Stanley Kubrick in 1968 with HAL because you've got this voice synthesis and voice recognition that's coming on fairly soon, but that's nothing that's ever going to work over the Internet.
But see, The thing is, as you say, we're not going to be doing away with PCs anyway soon, but it just sort of highlights the stratification of this industry, doesn't it?
Sure.
All the different levels that are coming out there, and it makes the marketplace more complicated.
Right.
It's just something we all need to be paying attention to. Got to take a quick break, folks. It's 39 After. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. We'll be right back with Jonathan. Welcome back, Heroes. It's 44 After. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thank you very much for joining us. Our phone number is 888-822-8255, and my website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. Jonathan Zuck is the president of the Association for Competitive Technologies, ACT. He's our special guest and our good friend, and we're talking about the high-tech industry, and right now we want to talk about some handheld computers. Tell us about that, Jonathan.
Yeah, well, handhelds are becoming more and more popular, and most people predict that they will outpace the PCs fairly quickly. I mean, when we talk about the future of the PC industry, there's a number of people that say, well, roughly half of America have PCs, and that may be all the ones that want them. It's possible that a lot of people just want handheld computers or set-top boxes or some of these other alternatives, and handhelds are really really coming into their own in a lot of different forms.
What's some of the capability that handhelds offer us?
Well, I mean, there's a wide range of capabilities, but, you know, they began, a while ago with sharp wizards and things that were basically little personal information managers, or PIMs.
Right.
And they've expanded in capability to be more fleshed out, to have handwriting recognition so that you can take notes, so that you can, dictate into the machine. The latest Palm computer, the most popular handheld computer, is the Palm Pilot from 3Com.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the Palm 7 was just released with wireless capability.
Right.
So that you can connect to the internet and browse the web from your handheld computer.
But it's about $600.
It's about $600. It's still a little bit expensive.
And $300 a year for wireless email.
Yes, because it's new, but you know that by the time you're trying to buy one of these for your spouse for Christmas, those prices will have come down dramatically.
Well, not only that, but I mean, if you have an application where you need to be able to get your email from virtually anywhere, my question on the wireless part there, Jonathan, is how does it hook up? What does it work off of, satellite?
It's cellular.
Cellular.
Right,
okay.
It's not satellite yet. It's using cellular connections or radio connections. It depends on the device.
Yeah.
But there are all kinds of networks out there. There are beeper networks, and then there are cellular networks, et cetera, and different devices use different networks.
Now there's another one out there called a BlackBerry.
Well, the other trend is something called a two-way pager. And there have been some, Motorola's had one, and there have been a couple of other companies where your pager has its own email address, and people can send email to your pager, and then you can reply.
Mm-hmm.
And those have been increasing in popularity, although they've been a little bit kludgy, and it's been a separate address. People have had to know to email your pager's email address as opposed to your regular email address.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that has changed that dramatically is this new device you mentioned called the BlackBerry, which basically is a two-way pager, but it's connected specifically to your PC so that you have some software running on your PC that forwards mail to the pager from your inbox and then lets you email back through your outbox so that it's your regular email address that's being used. So that you can do email as if you were at the office while you're on the road, right from the BlackBerry pager.
But that's got to be staged from an internet-based email location, though, right?
I mean, right, exactly. So what happens is
there has to be
a top someplace that's being the dispatcher of these messages.
It's like one of the free internet email stations. I mean, it's got to be from something that resides on the internet.
Right. Exactly. In other words, a lot of people have, a desktop computer, whether it's at the office or at home, and that's connected to the internet. I mean, usually the one at the office is more continuously connected to the internet.
Right.
And you can run this software there, and then that software will forward your messages out to your BlackBerry, and then let you compose responses on the BlackBerry, and they forward back to the software so that it goes back out through your software.
But if you've already got your email on your PC, you'd have to establish another email location to operate the BlackBerry. Isn't that right?
If you've already got, ask that question again.
Well, in other words, I've got an email established on my computer, on my PC, over the internet. But it's not internet based. The email messages come into and reside on my hard drive, right?
Right.
All right. Now, but if I wanted to use one of these, like a BlackBerry or the Palm 7, am I not going to have another email address that where the messages always stay on the internet?
No. The key is that this software will run right on your computer and work together with your email software. So, in other words, however your email on your desktop works, you would just run the BlackBerry software alongside it.
Oh, okay.
And it would let you, and it won't, it doesn't delete any of the messages. They're all still there in your inbox for archival purposes and
things. I misunderstood that.
So you don't need another PC or a new email address. I mean, now there's some exceptions to that. I mean, you need a regular internet mail. It doesn't work so much with AOL, I don't think, yet.
Okay, all right. Stand by, Jonathan. Folks, we're going to take a break and wrap up the hour with a couple more thoughts from Jonathan on some new capability that's coming down the pike. We'll be right back. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Stay with us, please. We are back and speak before after. I'm Jim Blassingame. Thank you for joining us. And our special guest this hour is Jonathan Zuck, the president of the Association for Competitive Technology. That is a trade association that represents the high-tech industry out of Washington, D.C. Jonathan, you have some things that you were going to tell us about smartphones.
Well, yeah, the thing coming down the pike, I mean, the BlackBerry and some of these other tools are very cool. Part of the problem that we're dealing with is just a convergence issue. Mm-hmm. I can't give up my cell phone just to have a BlackBerry, and I don't want to start looking like I'm carrying a bat belt, you know, utility belt, with so many devices hanging from my hip.
Right.
But what's coming down the pike are more and more smartphones or intelligent phones that combine this type of functionality into the phone itself. I mean, I've got a Nokia right now, 6100 series, that allows me to receive email to the phone. It has some calendaring capabilities, and it's very basic in functionality.
And that comes in digitally. I mean, you see the words on the little
right,
screen.
Right, exactly. You see the words on your screen. Now, there's no way to reply to it or anything.
Right.
But at least you can set up a rule, like at your desktop, to forward messages from important people or something to your phone, so that you can know that they've arrived.
And you can leave, as you and I were talking off the air. You can leave. You can set it up so that it leaves that message at your host's internet site, at your host site, so that when you go back to your office, you're able to get that email and reply to it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so it's just more a question of knowing to go check your mail because you've seen that these messages have arrived.
Mm-hmm.
But they're moving beyond that. And for example, Qualcomm now has a phone with a Palm Pilot built into it.
Huh.
It's kind of a clunky phone because it's the size of a Palm Pilot. But it's a cellular phone, and you flip down the numbers, and you're looking at essentially a Palm PC computer right in your phone, so that if you go to your contacts, you can hit dial and call somebody directly from within the contacts folder, et cetera.
Hmm.
And we're going to see more and more devices like that are miniaturized and so-called smartphones, where they're building more of that type of capability, internet capability, right into the phone, where you won't need a separate pager or something to do your email and to do your phone. You'll be able to do it all from the same unified device.
I'm waiting for the one that's on the wristwatch or on the wrist device. I won't call it the watch.
Part of the problem, I think, though, in the end, is just what kind of minimum screen size to be
used for. I got that solved, John.
For text.
I got that solved.
What's that?
It's a heads-up holographic image.
Yeah, like they got on the F-15.
Yeah, right? and you speak to it. I mean, you see, of course, you can't touch a hologram, but you speak to it. See.
It could be audio, and there is work going on that where the thing could read you your email, and then you could dictate back into it.
Yeah, that's coming. I mean, I promise you, folks.
Oh,
and
sure.
Hopefully, before I die, I'll have a wrist device. You know, all I have to do is decide if I want leather or leather.
The last thing you buy instead of leaving any money to your children.
Yep, exactly. And all I have to decide is, do I want leather or metal band? And then I'll just push a little button or talk to it, and it'll put up a little heads-up display, and it'll say, you know, you can surf the internet or whatever, and you're just sitting there with your little hologram in front of you.
Exactly. But in the next few months, there's more of these smartphones coming out, and what you're going to see are more and more wireless portals, so the versions of MSN or Yahoo, et cetera,
right,
that are aimed specifically at the small screens. There's going to be fewer graphics and things, and information more efficiently delivered, actually using a technology called XML, which we can talk about someday.
Yeah, let's talk about that next time.
And
that's going to be the last word, Jonathan.
It's going to be great.
Thank you very much. See you next week.
Thanks.
Bye. Jonathan Zuck, ladies and gentlemen. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, because without your courage, hard work, and devotion to your dreams, America would not be the greatest country in the world. And remember, when opportunity knocks, it doesn't know you've had a bad day. Greet it with a smile. This is Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.